This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
Sitting in the sweltering heat and humidity of Chennai, me talking about winter may seem like I've gone completely cuckoo. But here's the thing. I'm talking about a different kind of season change. One that's giving many of our startup founders and their VC backers quite the chill.
The tech wreck clearly taking its toll. It's also a dramatic reversal for SoftBank, which just 1 year ago set a record for the highest profit in a quarter for any Japanese company.
Tiger Global's performance problems are mounting, with the firm losing $16 billion during the first 4 months of the year.
CEO of the mortgage startup Better.com laid off about 9% of his staff.
Tech company clamping down on employee costs. Tech layoffs have spread to Netflix as the streaming giant announced 150 cuts across the company following its first subscriber loss in a decade.
The funding winter is back. 3 years after Deepak Shahdad Puri of DSG Consumer Partners, a sector-focused VC fund, first wrote about it in an email to his portfolio companies.
I feel relative to other downturns, most folks at the growth stage are poised well. Same can't be said about early stage. I think it's exactly the opposite. The investors will be very nervous. They won't cut checks easily. They look for a trend. They look for a co-lead. They look for a signal. They will try to conserve capital to push more to their own companies. And so it feels like a replay of the beginnings of most other sort of shocks and downturns, where there'll be far more conservatism than aggression.
That's Kartik Reddy, co-founder of the 12-year-old homegrown VC fund Bloom Ventures that has backed edtech unicorn Unacademy and has put its might behind several other companies like Exotel, Dunzo, Purple, and so on. While Kartik said early stage startups are the ones facing the heat, there's a lot more happening on the global stage. To put it in perspective, the S&P 500 is down 19% since the start of the year, and the tech-heavy Nasdaq has fared even worse, plummeting over 28%. Masayoshi Son, founder CEO SoftBank, one of the most aggressive and influential technology investors globally, said he would slash investments after a $26 billion loss. This year, his ever-hungry tech and telecoms group is likely to invest only half or even a quarter of what it did in 2021. Tiger Global, another aggressive tech investor, reported a loss of $17 billion and counting. Just last week, South Korean e-commerce firm Coupang was trading 70% below its listing price. And Netflix shares have plummeted 70% in just 4 months as subscribers are logging off faster than one can say money heist. And just last week, Silicon Valley startup accelerator Y Combinator told founders of all its portfolio companies to hunker down, cut costs, and prepare for the worst. So, is winter still on its way or has it already arrived? It's Tuesday, the 24th of May. From the Economic Times, I'm your host, Diya Rekhi, and you're listening to Is Funding Winter Here? On the Morning Brief. So deals are taking longer to close, VCs are getting more selective, and founders are being subject to more grilling. Governance missteps are getting highlighted one after another. VCs are fighting with their founders. What does all of this mean for startup funding and the larger ecosystem in India? Will there be a rebound? Will tech IPOs take off or be put on hold? Stay tuned as we give you a 360-degree view from a founder and a VC. Harshil Mathur, CEO and co-founder of Razorpay, joins us with Kartik. Harshil's Razorpay is also backed by Y Combinator. Thank you so much, Kartik and Harshil, for joining me on the morning brief. Harshil, how bad do you think bad is this time around?
It's hard for anyone to predict how bad an economic downturn will be. Right? Like in beginning of 2019, again, we had, when COVID was starting in and kicking in, we had similar discussions. I think this time is a little different in the sense that it's not one particular shock that you can navigate around. It's kind of a recessionary shock that will affect everything in the ecosystem, right? So comparatively, I think it's a very different situation. And that's why almost every company is being told to be a little more worried about their fundraising plan and how they spent their money, given that we don't know how long this lasts. And it's less about an external event. It's more about the emotional feeling that starts percolating when things start going bearish, that everyone starts getting driven by fear. And fear is hard to predict. How long does it last? How long people keep in under that umbrella? And when do people start believing in opportunities again? It's a little hard to predict that. And I think that's why at the start of such a shock, it's just prudent to be more conservative and just assume that things gonna get really, really bad before they start looking up. And that's why I think most companies and most investors are telling their companies that, hey, brace yourself for next 24 to 36 months, because that's how worse it could get.
Just another question to you, Harshil, because, Y Combinator's letter has been in the news, right? And they've been an investor in your company and they've warned very specifically about a crunch recently. Have you seen their correspondence, and what did you make of it?
Yeah, I saw their correspondence, and I think, Y Combinator has a very, very large portfolio of startups and mostly early stage, mid stage startups spanning across the world. And because of that, they have a very high level view of the entire ecosystem, especially on the funding side, because their companies constantly keep raising funds, and every company that raises funds informs Y Combinator. So they are generally the first ones to notice when the fundings of those companies start slowing down. They generally get to hear that and listen to that a lot more earlier. So I take their advice very seriously, and I saw their correspondence, and the message is fairly clear, right? If you can find a way to make your company what they call default alive, and if you can find a way to make your company profitable or EBITDA positive in this time, do whatever you can to get there, because then you would not be at the mercies of the market to survive and grow. And I think that's a really good advice in any kind of a downturn, because when funding is less available and if your company is depending on funding to survive, you're generally not in a great spot. The other advice they have given is, if you can't get to default alive, then at least extend your runway for next 24 months, so that if your company cannot raise money in the next 24 months, you are in a fairly firm position. The last advice is that if you really do need funding, and if you can find any investor who is willing to write your check, just go ahead and take it, right? And move fast on it, because you don't know till how long will that money be available.
Absolutely. Karthik, based on what Harshil is saying, the theme seems to be, caution. And from SoftBank's Masa to Y Combinator, a lot of them are talking about caution. But aren't they themselves responsible for creating the bubble in the first place?
No, it's not that way. I mean, I guess it's a collective, as the old saying goes, the market is supreme. So market is everyone. It's not any specific party's fault, and it's everybody's fault. Like, that's kind of been my learning over the decade of doing venture. So everyone gets carried away, and it's classic greed and fear equivalent, as you see a lot in public markets, playing out in private markets as well. But that said, yeah, I think there's a bigger cautionary tale here, which is the argument that private markets somehow know are smarter than public markets and keep pushing pricing up in the private markets and keep postponing IPOs. And the question is, to what end? So this idea that you can keep jacking up prices and pushing more capital into unviable long-term models and in the private markets and pushing them at a ridiculous premium to the public markets is something the public markets won't accept. And I think even before this sudden worldwide sort of shock being transmitted, these signs were there 6 months ago, right? Public markets were tired of justifying these prices. So I think that is the bigger question for everyone to answer in venture. For the last 14, 15 years, I think they've been disconnected. And the argument that you can keep jacking up prices and throwing more money without actually what the end state of a business model looks like or profitability looks like is I think, a little bit of, you're faking it, right? Hoping that you'll make it. But I think collectively, there will be a critique from the end state market, which is the public market. What I mean by that is, historically, if you look at the Amazons, Apples, Google stories of the world, at the minute they are able to show profitability or a path to profitability, they had the ability and the guts and the gumption to go public. So I don't know what this gamification gains in the short to medium term. It feels a very short-term game to me. Founders should put their foot down and say that, look, we are building to perpetuity. You might get a short-term outcome in 3 to 6 years. I'm there building for the next 20, right? If there are founders of that nature, I think the game should shift towards building more cautiously and getting to earlier IPOs. This fear of IPOing and this excuses that the regulator doesn't allow it is all a little bit of a sham, right? We had enough IPOs last year, which were allowed by the regulator. So yes, collectively, there is a little bit of, you know, sort of, everyone has to go back to the table and introspect a bit here on what are we trying to build in the long term.
But you know, what Karthik mentioned in terms of this faking it till you make it sort of thing, has that been the key trigger this time, Harshil? Or would you say it's something else?
I think what Karthik said, right? Like it's everyone in the ecosystem playing a role there. So I think at least last year was a very bit of a different year from that sense that everything was just driven by frenzy, right? And I think the best founders, of course, can find a way to navigate around that and still ensure that they know what is real, right? Like they know that the frenzy is not going to last forever, and which is what is happening right now. And I think the best founders in the ecosystem have used that frenzy in a way to ensure that they are well capitalized and they are prepared for whatever this downturn entails. And if they are not, they should be taking steps right now to ensure that they are prepared for however long this downtime lasts. And that is going to be the key to the best companies being built out. Like even if you look at 90s dot-com bubble, right? Amazon was listed at that point of time and their valuation crashed. And it took them 7 to 8 years to come back to the same peak valuation that they hit in that dot-com bubble. But because it was a strong fundamental business, they could sustain those 7-8 years, right? So I'm saying the best of the companies are formed and discovered during these downtimes because they have a real business model and a real value creation that's happening. And no matter market's ups or downs, such value creation is always noticed and is treated separately, right? So I think we'll see the same playing out, that the best of the companies will find a way to navigate around this and differentiate themselves out. And as the markets slow down and consolidation happens, these are the companies that will survive and thrive through long-term value creation.
You know, when we're speaking about this sort of resilience in the sector, we've also seen a lot of stories of, you know, VCs versus a founder, corporate misgovernance. Since early this year, fintech firm BharatPay and social commerce startup Trell, as well as Zillingo, have undergone internal audits on charges of financial fraud and corporate governance lapses. Karthik, like, what exactly was going on? In the sense that when everything was fine, it seemed like everyone was looking the other way. But all of a sudden, we see these skeletons sort of coming out of the closet. I want your take on this.
Well, I don't think these are necessarily strongly correlated to a downturn. Yes, you're right that they will get closer attention when there's cash burns and the business model is not able to slow. I mean, the burns and losses are not able to slow down. There'll be a little bit more digging deep. I mean, it feels counterintuitive, right? Broadly, as you're taking in, the business is actually gaining and seemingly gaining in confidence. If you take a company which is suddenly shooting up from, you know, I mean, a lot of which happened in the last 2-3 years, from, let's say, seed to 50 million-ish kind of range, all the way to 500 million to a billion, one has to question whether the founders are equipped to handle that kind of capital and scaling efficiently, or, you know, whether their organization is capable to handle this kind of growth pressure, is at least my humble take of seeing, you know, a lot of companies grow in our portfolio. So then, rather than actually taking the feet off the, you know, the scrutiny that should otherwise be applied to these early stage companies, just because they're getting larger on paper, it does not mean that you don't go deeper in terms of actually conducting more diligence around every round.
Harshil, would you like to weigh in on what Karthik said? Do you have a similar opinion or do you differ here?
I completely agree with what Karthik said, right? I think governance is really critical, and whether it's a early stage startup or late stage startup or a public company. And in the end of the day, if you are accepting money from other people, right, whether it is public market investors or private investors, you are responsible for that money. Like, this is one thing, for example, YC would say on day one of when you join the batch that, like, because when you join the batch, you used to get at least in our time $120,000, which is increased now. On day one, they would say, this is not your money. It's not your money to go out and gamble in a Vegas casino. It's the money given to the company for a specific purpose. And I think having all of those checks and balances is not something that anyone should shy away from. And I think one of the things, right, of course, a downturn is generally not a great thing, but one of the positives of a downturn is that such basic things start coming back more easily, right? Like when there is frenzy and when everyone wants to just put money behind companies, then it's very hard to ask those tough questions. But in these downturns, we see that people go back to the drawing board, ask those tough questions, ensure that are we scaling up with the right checks and balances, right?
But, you know, what does all of this mean for a company like Razorpay, this entire downturn? How are you sort of putting systems in place to deal with it?
See, I think as a company, some of these things are not new, right? Like focus on sustainability, focus on economics is something like you shouldn't discover it. Hey, just because of the downturn, I need to start focusing on it. I think if you're a founder of a company and you look at this message and you suddenly say, hey, now I need to focus on sustainability, then you're in a very tough spot, right? So I think the only thing that changes is that you prioritize sustainability over a lot of things that you do in a positive environment that like, for example, a lot of times you would take some of these questions that how can you ensure that you get the right growth at the same time ensuring that the basic economic stays. But in this downtime, you say that like the sustainability matters more than anything else. The other thing that almost every company like ours is doing, and like when I speak to founders in the ecosystem, is ensuring that they have plans in place for next 24, 36 months, assuming that there's no funding available at all. Right. And I think that's the most important thing. Right? If you can be in that position that you don't need any funding at all in the next 24, 36 months, then the only thing you need to go and do then is head down and execute. And I think we sometimes don't talk about it enough, but the biggest value creation that founders or companies can do in this time is just head down and execute and create like a lot of value. When a lot of companies in the ecosystem will be distracted by not getting access to funding, by not being able to hire because of their lack of funding and everything else.
Got it. You know, Karthik, that's from a startup perspective. You were raising your fourth fund and first close took place last year at $105 million. Has life gotten affected because of the central bank tightening and this funding freeze and so on?
Yeah, there's definitely some ramifications. I can see that there were two effects. One was, I think, people were riding high on their mark-to-markets, just as we would on as fund managers. Even the LPs are one step away looking at their portfolios and saying, wow, everything's looking great. So that is there's a sentiment dampener, right? When you see most of those positions have lost a lot of value and you're a little nervous about committing more capital to venture. So I think the existing LPs who came in obviously are committed long-term. Usually very deep pockets of money are not concerned about short-term. They're making a 10-12 year bet on us over three funds. So it's not like a year of macro shock will change their mindset on whether they should play India or whether they should play being a Bloom LP. It's a shorter term capital or newer capital. The good news is that it's not money that we draw down one shot. In our life, it's over 4-5 years. So there's enough of, you know, if someone thinks about the asset class long term, they're not deep shocks. So thankfully, we're closer to past the 150 mark in our commitment. So hopefully no one will back out and we'll get to our goal of closing the fund.
Sure, sure. Harshal, what are the like real world implications of this whole thing for you? How are you tightening the belt? You've mentioned briefly about it in your previous answer, but if I can just ask you a little bit more about whether things like your impending IPO, for instance, have been put on hold or anything like that, which you can share when you went back to the drawing board.
See, I think it's important to take cognizance of the changes happening in the ecosystem and rework your strategy, right? Because a lot of plans that you form in bullish ecosystems, not necessarily are the right plans for a bearish ecosystem, right? And it's important to understand that. So some of the things that we, for example, are focusing on is, A, first is, of course, survival, right? Ensuring that we have a good, strong plan to ensure that we are not dependent on anyone else for the next 24, 36 months. The second is that reduce some of the experimental stuff that we would do in a bullish time. The third thing is that how can we use this to consolidate our position in the market ecosystem, right? Like, so if we see lesser pricing pressure from the ecosystem because of less funding available, and this was a big problem in the last 2 years that even if you wanted to increase your margins, you couldn't win. There's so much money available in the ecosystem. Can we use this time to make our economics even better than they are and ensure that we have built some pricing power in this ecosystem and look at consolidating our position in the market? So if there are great teams or great companies that are finding a hard time just because of the changes in the ecosystem, but we can combine forces with them and scale faster in this time together, then use that to that advantage, right? That is the third thing. And then lastly, right, I think if there are macro changes in the ecosystem, how do you respond to that? So for example, if there's a lot of faith or projections built on top of the growth of certain segments of the ecosystem and that growth might or might not happen given the changes, how do you use your internal bandwidth to find that growth through other pockets which might not be as impacted? So the macro picture is pretty strong for India, right? Like especially outside the tech ecosystem. So if you can continue to ride on that wave, the wave of the Indian growth story, the wave of the consumption story of India, and you can find a way to continue to get your growth out of that pocket even in this time.
Absolutely. Karthik, just to sort of, you know, get you to give me your perspective, do you see a lot of companies delaying their IPOs because of what is happening? Because maybe many of them are looking to time the markets in a sense. And also, do you think that VCs are going to get a little bit more cautious when it comes to, you know, providing money for things like customer acquisition? Because that's been something that a lot of companies have, you know, used as a reason to get funding. So just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think a lot more grilling will happen on cost of customer acquisition and growth, which is not showing any substance in terms of either monetization or crazy retention and engagement. Certain business models, like if you have a social consumer play and if you're expecting monetization to happen, it won't. But what is the proxy for that is something that a VC will obviously take a harder stance in the board meetings, I feel, and essentially say, cut down the burn. You're seeing the sense of that happen already. Large number of layoffs, and they're all reflective of the fact that, hey, there's no point in acquiring customers unless they're paying and justifying your cost of acquisition in one way or the other. On your other question, it's natural that IPOs have slowed down, will slow down. I think the regulators also a little spooked. I think they gave a free hand to tech companies to figure out how to sell the narrative to the markets. The fact that most of them are not doing that well is definitely a worry for them, because then they will apply three times the lenses and filters to ensure that the right business models or business are going IPO. All of which means that, you know, you have to be more cautious and be more confident of justifying your business model. I wish folks like Lenskart follow the path that a Nike or a Delivery showed, which is, I can justify the strength of my business model to the public market, so let's go IPO. And sooner and quicker in the journeys, more companies go to the public markets, more the confidence of the broader investor ecosystem in the domestic public markets to buy tech and hold for a long time.
Sure. Harshal, just one thing that you had mentioned while answering was consolidation in a sense, right? You work in a sector that thrives on wafer-thin margins. At such a juncture where, you know, big boys with deeper pockets can double your pain and force to sell, do you see consolidation as the way forward?
I think consolidation plays an important role in building pricing power, in building long-term sustainable moats in the ecosystem, right? And that is very hard to execute in a bullish market, right? When there is so much capital available in the ecosystem, it's sometimes very hard to drive consolidation plays, even when interests are aligned and even when it makes a lot of logical sense. Just getting everyone aligned and saying that this is the right thing. I think the ability of big boys to spend money doesn't change whether it's a bullish market or bearish market. I mean, in fact, in a bullish market, they have even more money to spend, right?
Karthik, do you see consolidation as the way forward?
It's bound to happen. Every downturn you see that, partly because, you know, good teams, good businesses shouldn't go to waste. And if they are not self-sustainable, then they will end up probably finding a home. And similarly, large businesses might say that, hey, there are adjacencies and cap tables think it's a good idea to merge. Or, for example, if they're competing head-on and they feel like monetization is still a while away and there'll be a lot more bloodletting if they compete, they should merge. We've seen all those three forms of sort of consolidation over the last 10 years in one form or the other, at one cycle or the other. As we get more fluent in it, I think it's inevitable in the venture ecosystem.
A number of Indian startups have laid off employees since the start of 2022. ET had reported on April 18th that more than 1,800 contractual and full-time employees have been fired from Unacademy, Meesho, Trell, Lido Learning and Furlenco. EdTech unicorn Vedantu had laid off 624 people this month, including 424 people last week. ET also reported that Cars24 had laid off over 600 employees in the same week. Harshil, as someone who's part of this booming startup ecosystem, right? Do you think we're going to see a lot more companies either winding up overnight or laying off a lot of people? Do you see that as a very natural result of what is happening?
See, I think with certain segments it will happen, right? And there's no running away from that, right? There are a lot of segments that are where companies are built on back of aggressive growth, right? And then you hire a lot for that aggressive growth. And then suddenly when the funding system changes, when you know that money, it's not easy to get money just for pushing growth out, then those teams have to restructure, and then restructuring leads to layoffs, right? And particularly, like, if you see even the layoffs today, most of those are happening in the B2C ecosystems. Most companies are in B2C nature because in the B2C segment, there's a lot of money pumped behind growth where, as Karthik mentioned earlier, Uneconomics comes out much, much later. So totally expect that to continue to happen to a larger parts of the ecosystem, especially parts of the ecosystem that are focused on growth.
Right. Karthik, you know, this is not the first time we're seeing a down cycle, but it seems like nobody really learns and history repeats itself. Is that a fair assessment, or do you feel that's a bit harsh?
Two things, right? One, I think memories are getting shorter in terms of how we function as human beings. Second, doubly so in the Indian context, less so maybe in the global context, we've been on like a largely 14-year bull run, right? And I don't agree with that statement that we've had shocks in the recent past. Other than the pandemic, of course, sort of setting everybody back into a deep shock for 3 to 4 to 5 months. But as I said, the digital ecosystem recovered phenomenally well. So if that had been a little bit more sustained, maybe would have learned a different set of lessons. Prior to that, the shocks, again, either the ecosystem wasn't as widespread, the number of participants, of both founders and their teams, were not exposed to it as recently as even 2016. So I don't think the shocks have been so acute that there are, you know, dozens of lessons and playbooks to learn from. Pre-financial crisis, there was hardly an ecosystem in India. So in a nutshell, I don't agree that India has seen actually difficult times per se. I think there have been personal journeys which have been that way. The Indian VC ecosystem has had it really rosy for like 15, 16 years on not on a steeply ascending curve, but a gradually ascending curve. So this is, if this is a serious, as serious a setback as everyone's saying, then the next 2-3 years will be a great test and lesson for an ecosystem which is probably 5-10x bigger than it was in 2016-15
types. If I could just get both of you to give me your perspective on whether you believe, you know, the funding winter has set in, that would also be helpful. Do you think it's as grave as it's being made out to be?
From my lens, there are two things that will guide this. One is preparedness of number of managers and dry powder. Eventually, we're looking in a cycle to deploy capital. And as long as there is enough of that dry powder committed to, we're always going to look for opportunities, part A. Part B, it might not be as quick or as widespread. It will be far more discretionary. You'll write to second-time founders and seasoned teams. You'll write to people who have actually seen some variant of facing challenging circumstances before. Younger founders will find it definitely a little tougher. And if you're a smaller fund, you'll always seek some hedging from, you know, co-investing to the larger fund, for example. So all of these, I think these slight behavioral shifts will happen. So there'll be lesser deals, larger per company checks, arguably lower valuations. And as long as founders and VCs are reconciled to those, there will continue to be momentum in the market, but it'll be probably, you know, 2x more selective than it usually is in a bullish market.
Harshil, what would you say?
Yeah, so okay, from a founder's perspective, right? So there's no question right now that the funding has slowed down, right? And we have public statements from some of the largest investors in the ecosystem talking about how they are going to slow down investing in the ecosystems right now. And that's going to have a effect on every part, whether it's early stage, late stage, mid stage companies in terms of amount of funding available or amount of investors available to invest, right? So now there's nobody can say how long it's going to last, but my advice to founders is that assume the worst, right? Because worst case, you'll be wrong and you'll be able to raise money all well and good. But if you assume that, hey, my funding will be available again in the next 6 to 8 months and you are wrong then the impact of that is going to be catastrophic, right? So first thing is just ensure that you can survive that. And once you have those plans in place that you can survive, then the second step is just heads down and execute. Because even when there are bullish markets and founders are raising a lot of money, I have said the same thing that raising money doesn't make you win in the business. So similarly, not raising money doesn't make you lose in the business. What decides success and failure at the end of the day is the value that you create and the kind of customers that you get on board and the ecosystem that you create around it, right? And both bullish and bearish markets are a good time to do that.
Call it what you want. Funding winter, funding crunch, or tightening the noose around startups. One thing is clear. The euphoria around funding for startups is giving way to caution. And that's not such a bad thing, honestly. It probably would translate to VCs becoming more selective about who they would like to back and asking tougher questions about what the company's road to profitability would be like. For long, the board seemed to be in awe of the founder and looked the other way, and all of a sudden there is panic all over. The funding squeeze is real. If Sequoia, the largest VC fund, is reported to be slashing its fundraising, then you know volatility is indeed a cause of concern. But resilience also does not mean ruthless. So companies that can endure pain in a more humane fashion will last longer, draw talent faster, and emerge stronger. Thank you, Karthik and Harshil. I'm your host, Diya Rekhi, and you've been listening to Is Funding Winter Here? On The Morning Brief. Producers for the episode, Surbhi Modi from ET and Swati Joshi from Awaaz. Sound editors, Indraneel Bhattacharji from ET and Varun Kapahi from Awaaz. Executive producer, Arijit Barman. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. If you like this episode, please make sure to share it on your social media. Thank you for listening and have a great day. All clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credits mentioned in the description.